The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number three of A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM channel 158. It's Gil Alexander flying solo, just like old times. Kelly back on Monday. Matt Brown will be in tomorrow. Jeff Parle still to come this hour. But first, Joe Sheehan joins us, the author of the Joe Sheehan newsletter. You can follow him not only at joesheehan.com, but at joe_Sheehan on Twitter. Joins us now courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Less than 6 weeks left in the Major League Baseball season. Joe, good morning. I was talking a little bit about this with Matt yesterday. Might we have 5 non-division races when all is said and done, and only the moribund AL West will have a division race when all is said and done, or do you think we'll have more?
I would say I don't know, only because we have such a clutch of mediocre teams right now that I'm not sure any of these teams is not a risk, to use a double negative, of going 4-8 over 12 games. Like, is there any one of these teams that you couldn't see kind of going into a bit of a collapse? Like, I mean, I talked down the Braves earlier this summer. They actually had a nice little bounce back, and they're probably the safest along with the Dodgers. But you know, I think the NL Central is very much at risk. The Brewers have had some trouble scoring runs. They've had some injury issues. The bullpen hasn't been quite as sharp. We're going to see how they navigate their pitching down, the starting pitching down the stretch, with innings concerns on Jacob Mizrowski, even Kyle Harrison. So I'm not sure. I think we're going to get a surprise here. I don't think 5 of these divisions are locked up. You could convince me that 2 are, and then the rest, you know, we'll have to wait and see.
Closest right now, the only one within 4.5 games, first place, second place, is the AL West. Rangers currently 2 games behind the 63-62 Astros. Are we going to get a losing record division winner? I'm looking at you, AL West, specifically. And are we getting a losing record wild card team from the AL? We're getting that, aren't we? Probably with the number 3 wild card position.
I mean, like I said, I can see all of these teams losing 8 out of 12. But the thing is, a lot of them have the potential to win 8 out of 12. When you look at this race, and you know, you look at these wild card teams, you figure somebody's going to go 23-15 down the stretch, right? I mean, right? But then you actually watch them play every night. It's like, well, you know, the Blue Jays, you're not very good. The Tigers, you're not very good. And I think it's more likely we get the wild card, and not just because that the third wild card is currently under 500, but just because with the head-to-head play within the division, probably one of these AL West teams gets to 83-79, which is in a full 162-game season. 82-80, I want to say, is the lowest mark. The Mets were 82-79-73. There was an Astros or a Cardinals team, I believe, that was 82-80, and then 83-79. I think somebody gets to that in the West, but the wild card, you've got real risk of a sub-500 playoff team. Now, 32 years ago, in 1994, the AL West was led by a 54-64 Rangers team, and the game was so embarrassed they canceled the World Series. So, you know, we'll see if we get to that point again. Yes. But, you know, I've said many times, Gil, if you play out that season, so much of baseball history is different, because there's a chance that Matt Williams or Ken Griffey or Frank Thomas gets to 62 home runs. And then how different is the conversation in 98 with McGuire and Sosa and Bonds? You know, what happens with Bonds going forward? And if a sub-500 team makes the playoffs in the first year of the expanded playoffs, does that forever change the conversation about expanded playoffs? So, you know, MLB wanted 14 playoff teams when they negotiated the last CBA. They wanted to go to 14. MLB, the players knocked them down to 12. MLB is going to want to go to 14 again. If we have a sub-500 playoff team this year, I think that conversation changes, because if you let 14 teams, if you let 7 teams in every league into the playoffs, you're going to have a number of sub-500 teams in the playoffs over the course of a decade.
See what you learned on the show? You didn't know that the 1994 World Series didn't happen because the Rangers were 10 games below 500? I wasn't going to ask you about this, but since you opened the door to it and you're a baseball guy, because it doesn't really have to do with betting, but we should kind of get a heat check on this. Are we going to have baseball next year, Joe?
I'm confident. Yeah, I think it's going to look a little bit like 2022, where you'll have a lockout that extends into March. There'll be a settlement, a shortened spring training, and then a full 162-game season, possibly with a modified schedule. It's possibly even maybe to 154 they cut it down, because they just don't have a lot of room on the back end anymore. I mean, you're already playing to Halloween. I believe Game 7 of the World Series is scheduled for Halloween this year. We've seen the World Series scheduled into early November. So there's just not a lot of wiggle room. But we're not going to see the season get wiped out. There's just too much money at stake in future television contracts to put the 2027 season in that kind of jeopardy. They've got to go out, negotiate new TV deals, and they want to have not just a clean CBA to do it, but you've got to have that positive momentum. Right now, baseball has a lot of positive momentum. And if you have a lockout that eats half a season, you're going to throw that all away.
God, I wish I believed everything you said, but if I'm being honest, I don't know if I do. Let me ask it a different way.
When, sound like the women I date.
Well, they called me beforehand. When do we get worried? Like, I guess we don't get worried in December, but like, what's the time? Mid-March, early March? Like, when do we really start get worrying if they haven't come to an agreement?
I want to say March 7th was when they settled last year. Okay. Last time. So, Valentine's Day, presidential holidays, I would say you got to get to Paddy's Day, St. Patrick's Day, March 17th, before I'd honestly really be worried. And you got to remember, this is not a lot of what we're seeing now. And certainly I analyze this for what I do. This posturing, there's some ridiculous proposals that have been made. I don't think it gets serious until really January, February. And that's the pattern with these two sides for the last couple of negotiations. They just don't get really serious about it until the winter.
Yeah. Okay, we'll see. You and I, you more than anybody, but we love baseball. We still love it after all these. I know it's not the most popular thing necessarily with a younger generation, but we love it for so many different reasons. And one of those is the old adage: you see something at the ballpark. You know, we talked about this with the Blue Jays and the Red Sox last week. The fourth out rule being invoked, and then last night the Mets are playing the Padres. The Padres have three runners thrown out at home in the first two innings. And by virtue of that, right, the Mets largely by virtue of that, hold on and win that game 2-1. You ever seen that before so condensed in two innings of a baseball game?
Even the back-to-back base runner kills in the first inning were unusual.
Yes.
It's funny. I was locked in on this game because I'd given out the Mets first five on prop points yesterday with Jeff and Nick. And so I really, all of a sudden, Nolan McClain can't get an out. The Padres went 4-for-5 in the first inning and didn't score. And you just don't see that a whole lot.
Yeah.
You know, the first sent, there's a term that we use online. It's called toot bland. Thrown out on the bases like a nincompoop. I forget who came up with it. I apologize to who I'm ripping off.
Yeah.
But not all base running outs are toot blands. Like sometimes you correctly should try to score the run, usually with two outs, and you get thrown out. That was Machado on the second one. The first one, the third base coach just kind of didn't waver. Kind of gave a half wave. And I mean, who was it? Jake Cronenworth. Jake Cronenworth was out from me to you, and you're in Vegas. And then the third one again, with two outs, you send the runner. If anything, third base coaches, teams probably aren't aggressive enough with two outs, given modern baseball where, you know, it's a 240 hitting league. You're probably not going to get that hit with the next batter. So you should be sending the runner home more. But the Cronenworth one, the first of the sequence, just absolutely hilarious. He was out by 50.
It's like from Major League, right? Or something like that. We got to bring back nincompoop. I think that's like a solid put down. It's not used often enough. You're a nincompoop. We'll get to your daily picks here after the break because you got several of them for today's slate of Major League Baseball games. But before that, I don't know when the last time I asked you this was, but our non-betting friends, what they usually ask you is what? They say, hey, who's going to be in the World Series this year? Who's going to win this? I'm going to throw that to you. I know it's basic for bettors, but I'm curious because in baseball, that's an interesting calculus, right? Because it's who can slip in, right? Who's obviously in the playoffs, but who can also slip in. But then the nature of who ends up having to play a best of three matters hugely in this circumstance. It's a best of three to a best of five. And then only when you get to the championship series and the World Series, a best of seven. So I say this with the backdrop of, and I know the Dodgers rolled last night, but they've obviously sort of had a tough time of it of late. Is this the year where we just shouldn't pencil them in? Like, is this a year where it's like, yeah, no, these problems aren't that easily correctable in the postseason? Who's in the World Series, Joe?
Start of the year, I had Cubs over Mariners, and that's still mathematically possible. And I think the Cubs right now are actually probably a little bit undervalued. Everybody's undervalued because of all of the emphasis being put on the Dodgers, and they're so good, and they're ruining baseball, and they spend $800 million on players. But I'm going to give you the stock answer, which is the nature of the baseball playoffs means that the favorites are always, always going to be overvalued, and the 11 and 12 seeds are always going to be undervalued. When we went to this format in 2022, the first 2 years, the lower seed won, what was it, five of the first eight first round series, best of threes. And a best of three between two playoff teams is basically a coin flip. And even as you go deeper, the separation among good, among the 12 playoff teams in any year is so small that there's just no thing as being a big favorite or a big underdog. So always I'm going to be looking down the line. I'm going to be looking for that Texas Rangers in 2023. I'm going to be looking for those Royals or Giants in 2014. And the Dodgers at, what is it, 170 today? I want to say we talked about this 2 weeks ago. You know, I think not the Dodgers, if you can find it, is a great bet at, you know, minus what it's going to be now, minus 200 or something, just because it's so hard to be a 67% favorite in three straight series. And mind you, that doesn't even consider the possibility, as you note, that they might fall into that first and have to play four series.
Yeah, and that's going to be huge. Who's the, I'll ask it a different way, and I probably asked in some form before, who's the team that if they slip in, right? Not have to slip in, but as long as they get into the postseason, that they're built to succeed in short series more than most would think?
I'm going to give you the stat head answer, which is none of them, because that's just not the way. There's no such thing as being built for the playoffs. We're seeing all kinds of different builds. I do think the team that if they get in scares me is the Mariners because of the frontline starting pitcher.
God, I'm done with the Mariners and the Rangers, Joe. I can't do it anymore. Like anytime now we're like three quarters plus of the way through the season. No, you're not going to do it? Okay. Joe's picks for today. He's got a bunch of them. Next on A Numbers Game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network. You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. Visa Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with VSiN Pro.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Most people think sports betting is about picking winners. Ungambled is built on a different idea, matched betting and arbitrage. It's a tool that teaches you how to use sportsbook bonuses and promotional offers to capture value, whether or not your side covers. And Ungambled backs it up. You don't turn a profit on your bankroll in 8 weeks, they refund your membership. To learn more, start with a free guide, the free guide at ungambled.com/vsin. That's ungambled.com/vsin and use promo code VSIN for 10% off. Bet sharp, look square. And thank you to Drew Tabor, the founder of Ungambled, who was kind enough to spend a few minutes with us yesterday on the show. I'm going to Ron Burgundy my way through a few tweets here. See what happens. This could go. This could get very ugly. We never know. Chris Garbin. Gil, you have to find Wayne's World's top 10 list of mispronounced lyrics. Can't recall if Rock the Casbah was on there, but Jacques the Monkey, as opposed to Shock the Monkey, and Bathroom on the Right, Bad Moon Rising, were on there. Shock the Monkey's Peter Gabriel, right? Someone said Jacques the Monkey. Oh, meaning the monkey was named Jacques. That's hilarious. Money Gun Guz, who did very well in Circa Millions last year, says, have you decided, Gil, if you will be doing more Survivor entries this year? I do six every year. I don't know why that's the number I sort of landed on, as opposed to sort of maxing it out at 10. Again, you are up against, let's just be honest about Circa Survivor. You're up against a bunch of groups that have like 100 plus of these. Yes, it had been going on for years before last year, but not quite in the same way. And you just, as long as you know you're up against that, cool. It's just too much fun not to play. So to answer your question, Money Gun, I don't know. I really don't know. But I got to make that decision pretty quick here. Time is a wasting. It'll at least be six. Let's put it that way. Somewhere between six and 10. Darren Frazier. Gil is a former big-time KML on-air personality, not knowing the words to one of the most popular songs of our time, akin to a top sports tout giving out his four-star three-unit play based on inside info that gets absolutely crushed? Just asking. Well, Darren, but the Clash's Rock the Casbah is not in my wheelhouse in terms of genre. That's not a genre that I like. I just kind of know the song. At Montreal Max, here's a fun fact, speaking about tennis retiring, and I found where the most rare to do it is, Sabalenka, who's only retired once. Oh, this is great. Sabalenka is the most rare to do it. He was only retired once, and the irony from today's show was it was in Berlin in 2024, down 5-1, and getting injured playing, of all people, Kalinskaya. So Kalinskaya got the benefit of that. Wow, I don't even remember that. Has Iga ever walked off the court in the middle? I don't remember that happening either. I could be wrong. Joe Sheehan, kind enough to join us for a second segment. Joe, I know how much you love me reading tweets before your segments.
Come on, man. Yeah. We're not going to keep doing that.
No, that's the last one. I promise. That's the last one. Okay, you have bets today. Let's start with the Rockies and the Dodgers.
Yeah, this is mostly just a fade of the Dodgers. I know they put up an 11 spot last night against Sugano, who I understand was the most profitable pitcher to bet on leading into yesterday, if I heard that correctly yesterday.
Yes.
But, you know, this is a team that's really struggled at the plate of late, in the second half, really. The age of their team, there was some great analysis about by Inosaris of The Athletic and Chad Moriyama over at Dodgers Digest talking about how they're seeing a lot more fastballs. I've done some work in the past looking at how older players are being pushed out of the league by fastball pitchers. So the Dodgers have struggled because of that. Tonight they throw Eric Lauer, a left-handed contact pitcher in Coors Field. This is one of those things where I don't know if the Rockies are going to win. I do think they have a better chance than the one plus 173 reflects. So give me the Rockies at the big number.
Tomoyuki Sugano. If you had bet him blindly in his 22 starts this year for the Colorado Rockies, you would be up, according to covers.com, over 13 units. So I don't know if there's anything to that. They just happen to win as dogs in most of those. So there you go. Not pretty.
I'm remembering our buddy Dave Sharapan with the CLV can.
Yes, the CLV. You know, Dave Sharapan.
The track record can. Yeah. So Dave Sharapan. It doesn't really matter if you don't win that night.
May he rest in peace. And believe me, I have a whole lot of tennis ones that go in his... his CLV trash can. That's right. Here's a game that you're not required to watch. The Athletics at the Royals, but you do have a bet on it.
This is just straight fading the A's. They started the year 38-38. They're 11-38 since then. They're throwing Jack Perkins tonight, who's just, I mean, they're just trying to get through the season at this point. They've lost almost all of their good players. Tyler Soderstrom now on the IL. We'll see how long he's out. Shane Langeliers previously, Brent Rooker previously, Nick Kurtz. We'll see if he even comes back this year. You've got a team that's basically got two even average hitters in the lineup. So I gave out them to have the worst record in the league earlier this year on the show, and I think they're heading towards that now. They're just one of really the worst team in baseball right now. So this is just a straight fade of them. The Royals, it'll be a mishmash for them tonight. They're trying to work Daniel Lynch back into the rotation. They might use an opener for him. They might start him, but I don't really think it matters. The A's are so bad right now that only having to bet, you know, was it 138? I got him at earlier. It looks like it's up to 155 now on your screen. Even that against this A's team is good value.
Yeah, and let me just say this, because the A's, as we talked about earlier, the worst money line team in all of baseball. Again, if you went through the bizarro exercise of betting them every game this season, which, by the way, if you're doing that, something's terribly wrong with you. But they're actually worse at home, right? They're like, you'd be down 22 units on them at home only, he says. Oh, no, so 22 units overall, 19 of which at home, pardon me. 19 of the 22 are at home, actually, but here they are on the road against Kansas City. Before we move on to your other place, just for the Las Vegas folks who are listening, who are anxiously awaiting the Athletics' arrival, is there a franchise, you would know this, you're the person to ask on this, is there a franchise strategy that they just couldn't, I mean, for lack of a better term, they couldn't really care less what they do in Sacramento, and they're just sort of plant the timing is to have it coalesce before they come to Vegas? In other words, maybe they'll start being more serious about player acquisition right before they come here, or am I just saying something hopeful?
Well, it was interesting because going into Sacramento last year, they signed Luis Severino, bumped up the payroll a little bit. They went out and, you know, signed Rooker to the extension. They signed Soderstrom to the extension, Jack Wilson. They were making commitments to that team, not just for Sacramento, but also with an eye towards, hey, this is going to be our core that we're going to have together for 3 or 4 years when we arrive in Vegas in 2028. So they have put that into play, but they've had such a hard time developing pitching and getting pitching. And now it's going to be very hard to get any pitchers to sign there. It's such a hard park to play in. I don't think the Las Vegas ballpark on the Strip is going to play as crazy as the one in Summerlin, Henderson. You know, they played that insane week of baseball games earlier this year. But it's going to be a hitter's park, and they might run into problems acquiring pitching. So they're going to have to develop it. Gage Jump has come up this year. You know, Jamie Arnold was their last year's first round pick. You know, he hasn't had that great a year, but you're looking to bring him up by 28. I do think they're targeting that. And the long-term question is, are they going to be able to sign players who are going to want to come and play with this team?
Yeah. Should be fun, man. Can't wait. Braves at Twins at Target Field. Speaking of a team that can't quite get it together, Twins still on the outside looking in the AL playoff picture. But they still have designs on the postseason. They can still get there, again, as the scrum that is the American League. They are +115 home dogs today against the Atlanta Braves. Still looking good in the NL East.
Gil, let's be clear about this. I've called up 15 of my friends. We're trying to get into the AL wildcard race. I mean, I can probably, I'm like Monty Brewster. I can give you three good innings against anybody. And that's pretty much, you know, my contribution. So, you know, tonight I've given you a couple of fades today. I really like the Braves tonight for them. Tyler Mahle, since coming over from the Giants, two starts, been very effective. And it's come with a pitch mix. You know, sometimes you'll see this at the trade deadline. A guy will go to a new team. His new pitching coach, his new pitching staff will say, hey, why don't you do this? He's ditched his cutter in favor of a splitter. Just a dramatic change in his usage pattern with those two pitches, and he's been very effective over the two games. I'm going to say that that's real, and he's going to be able to outpitch Debbie Matthews tonight in Minnesota.
Okay. And then the Yankees. The Yankees is seemingly always, Joe, someone's always on the way to coming back and being back in uniform. Aaron Judge being the biggest of those. When is Aaron Judge coming back? Is it beginning of September? Is it mid-September? When is Aaron Judge going to be back in the pinstripes? Well, Carlos Rodon is the latest of the big names here. He is on the hill at Orioles Park at Camden Yards. Yankees are a slight road favorite. How are we playing this?
This is the same bet I gave out yesterday on prop points, basically. I had Shane McClanahan under 4.5 strikeouts in his first start coming back from the IL. He didn't get out of the third inning. Tonight, Carlos Rodon under 4.5 strikeouts. It's the same idea. You know, he went 41 and 54 pitches in his two rehab starts. He has a higher strikeout rate than McClanahan, for sure. The Orioles, a high strikeout team. I just don't think he's going to be able to work deep enough into this game to get 5Ks. So give me Rodon under 4.5 strikeouts, and I believe it was plus money when I saw it on DraftKings this morning. So, again, Rodon's going to be fine. He replaces Max Fried, who you talk about Yankee injuries. Fried just went back on the IL with the bone bruise on the left arm. So the Yankees have enough pitching depth that it's not critical. So, yeah, I think the under on K is for Rodon tonight.
Yeah, Fried, by the way, for those who missed it, 15-day IL retroactive to the 14th of August with a left elbow bone bruise. As Yankee fans sarcastically say yesterday, oh, I'm sure it's nothing. Yankees are going to win the pennant, aren't they, Joe, when all is said and done? They're going to win it, aren't they?
What? Sorry, I can't hear you. You're breaking up. Yeah, I honestly, the AL, it's going to be a total scrum. You're going to have the top and the bottom playoff team separated by 15 games, and anything can happen.
It's going to be fun, man. That means people should be betting, you know, matchups in the World Series, exactas, because it's just you're going to get better numbers than most other years with all of this uncertainty in the American League. Joe, can't thank you enough. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Gil. Take care.
Joe Sheehan, everybody. Best in the business. JoeSheehan.com for his newsletter. Coming back with Jeff Parlay next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, this is exciting. 2 days from now, Thursday, August 20th, 5 p.m. Eastern, hosted by the great Dustin Sweetelson, your master of ceremonies, is the 2026 VSiN Pro Football Futures Draft. Every pick doubles as a handicapping breakdown you can use. It's a fantasy football style snake draft. It's our second annual, by the way. Patrick Maher, your reigning champion, and curiously, and I do use that word, curiously, as the first pick in this year's draft. Interesting. Win totals, division winners, player props, and stat leaders. Last year's competitors all back for round two, joined by three newcomers stepping into the Futures draft room for the first time. Former wide receiver Keyshawn Johnson. Also former Super Bowl champion Keyshawn Johnson. Comedian and sports commentator Nick Bakay. My boy. And the guru, John Hansen. Oh, he brought in a ringer. From Prop Points, John Hansen will join us. Don't just watch the Futures draft. Profit from it. Tune in once again Thursday, August 20th, 5 p.m. Eastern, only on VSiN, the sports betting network. You see everybody's pretty faces there. By the way, shout out to Dustin, too, because he does a great job with this. It's not easy being a moderator of this stuff, but Dustin has the pitch-perfect demeanor to do this because he doesn't take it all that seriously and can give back whatever people throw at him. So love Dustin at the helm of this. Ladies and gentlemen, we refer to him here on this show. Now that we have 10 producers, we are calling Danny Higgins officially now producer number 10. Danny is our first producer that is not actually on air with us of the 10 most of the time, though he has been in the past. But Danny is officially the 10th producer. We call this gentleman the Grover Cleveland of producers because he was producer 5 and producer 8. He now works here in Las Vegas in local radio. It's the great Jeff Parles, who we, of course, call Jeff Parlay. How you doing, Jeffrey?
I'm good. You know, the mention of Nick Bakay for a person of my age.
Yes.
Might know Nick Bakay best from the great Nickelodeon show Angry Beavers, Gil.
Really?
So that's a perfect blast from the past for me.
Wow. I didn't even know that. Nick Bakay for sports bettors is most famous because well before ESPN would ever utter anything about betting, he used to do it was sort of a fictional segment about he and his wife betting Sunday football games. And everybody remembers Advantage Push in that Bakay voice that he would do. But it was done so cleverly. So we're looking forward to having Nick on that. By the way, the call letters of the local station here in Las Vegas that you work for?
So we just go by ESPN Las Vegas, okay. Gilly. If you're looking for us on the internet, just put in ESPN Las Vegas. That's the best way to do it.
Okay. I was old school with call letters, but you're right. ESPN Las Vegas. We'll do the trick. All right. You have a bunch of pro football thoughts. You have a bunch of college football thoughts. Let's start with pro football since we're just talking about our futures draft. And let's begin. By the way, it's funny because you sent me bullet points and I read them all in your voice. The way that you wrote them, I was dying laughing. Beginning with the Baltimore Ravens, who, by the way, Danny Higgins, producer number 10, is a big fan of. He's not going to like what you have to say here.
So I'm not saying that the Ravens aren't going to win 13 games or they're not going to win the AFC North going away or anything along those lines. But haven't we learned our lesson over the years that the Ravens, for whatever reason, are overrated going into the year or get overrated vastly during the year? This year, you have a win total of 11.5. I mean, you look at that on your screen. They're almost $4 to make the playoffs. They're odds on to win a division, which, look, I think Cleveland obviously has the worst quarterback situation in the NFL. The Steelers don't have Mike Tomlin, so even though I think McCarthy might be a little bit better than Tomlin at this point, the zombie nature of Tomlin always going over 500 isn't there anymore. And the Bengals always, can Joe Burrow play a whole season? But I don't think, when you look at this, I don't think Baltimore should be the favorite to win the AFC because you have first-time coaching staff there now. Now, do I think Jesse Minter ends up being a good coach? Probably. But do we know that for a fact? No. Declan Doyle's younger than me. So I wonder if, again, I think he's, again, guy that I think will be good down the line. I don't know if he'll be good right away as their OC. And then we get to Lamar. There's no arguing Lamar's talent, Gil. We've talked, even going back to when I was producing for you as number 5, not number 8. I mean, my number 5 year was the year that Baltimore was the one seed and Jackson won his first MVP. Mm-hmm. We know how good Lamar is, but I don't think he's capable of playing 17 games. I don't even think he's capable of playing 14 games. So how can you have a team where the quarterback, as good as he is always going to miss about a month of the season as the team that is favored to win the AFC, a team with that high of a win total? Again, I don't know if I'm going to end up placing any bets, but 11.5 feels really, really high on Baltimore.
You know, I always add this to the Ravens because I'm listening to everything you said. So I, again, for those who listen to this show, know that my nephew, my little guy, Owen Wright, who is now with the Houston Texans, in training camp with the Houston Texans, but he was with the Baltimore Ravens. And he used to talk about how John Harbaugh used to make them do two-a-days at a rate that was way different from any other NFL team. And the reason he knew that is because when they would bring in players from other teams, they would often say to him, like, what the hell are we doing? Like, we're working way, this isn't training camp. And I always wondered from those stories, and I have no way of proving this, right? But I always wondered from those stories, I was like, did John Harbaugh work them too much early that by the time seasons wound down, they were just gassed as a football team? And now there's no John Harbaugh. So I wonder if that will change. Who knows? Just a thought on that. You, like many, are bullish on the Houston Texans, though.
This is more a fate of the rest of the division. Now, I need to see C.J. Stroud regain some sort of good form, right, Gil? Because if C.J. Stroud was even just okay in that game in Foxborough last year, we probably would be would have talked about a Seahawks-Texans Super Bowl, not a Seahawks-Patriots Super Bowl a year ago. Stroud obviously has regressed since that amazing rookie year. I need him to get a little better to push them on that, like, plus 850 you see on your screen to win the AFC. But the rest of that division, look, Jacksonville, they had an amazing year last year. But they were in they had cap issues. So I don't think they've improved. I think they're a big-time regress. The Titans aren't ready yet. The Colts, I have no idea what to make of Indianapolis. Houston, I know what I'm getting out of that defense, even though I'm not a huge fan of the quarterback or the coach. I know that defense is going to be top five, at worst top seven. That should be more than enough to win this division comfortably. We're getting plus money still across the board on Houston. I'll take them to win the division at plus money. I think the best number out there is plus 115 for Houston to win the AFC South.
Anything with a plus price, you like it on Houston to win the AFC South. All right, let's go to the NFC. Oh, boy. Cowboys to win the NFC East and Cowboys to make the playoffs. You like both of those?
I'm very scared at how much I like Dallas coming into this year, Gil. It's a very scary proposition because you're dealing with a head coach that I don't love, even though Shoddy was better than I thought he was going to be in year one. But here's my thought process with Dallas. Their offense, assuming everyone stays healthy, and really that's just Dak and Lamb and Pickens. And who knows, obviously, with the Pickens nonsense as well with his contract. But as long as those dudes stay healthy, I don't care what the running back situation is. Their offensive line should be good enough. They're going to be a team that is a prolific offense yet again. Just get me from being a bottom three defense to a bottom 13 defense, Gil. And then all of a sudden, we're looking at a team that's a double-digit win team, a team that, look, I don't love Philly going into this year. I have no idea what the Commanders are going to be this year at all. The Tunsil injury obviously scares me. But I think this is an offense that is going to be top five, a defense that will be good enough. Dallas wins 11 games. That should be enough to win the NFC East as well. I'm on the Cowboys to win the NFC East, make the playoffs, go over, which probably means they'll go 6-11 and Dak will get hurt.
Oh, God. If we were off air and you were doing that, I would have held my hands to my ears and be like, la, 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 la. Just kind of can't stand the Cowboys. Chiefs, you are not in any way worried. You're over 10.5 wins on the Chiefs. Schedule a lot to do with that, you say.
Yeah, this is probably the least favorite of the ones I gave you, Gil. But I just think that we talked about last year, oh, they're going to regress to the mean on the one score games, right? They did that last year, but they did that to the absolute extreme.
Yes, they did.
So here we go again. We're going to regress to the mean again on one score games. You flip a few of them. Mahomes is more healthy. The injury bug is a little better for Kansas City. Playing a third place schedule for the first time in the Mahomes era, period. I think they're going to win the division out west, and I do like them to win 11 games, 12 games. So we'll go over 10.5 on that win total.
Yeah, Chiefs 11-0 in one score games in 2024, 1-9 straight up last year. So you're right, to the extreme. Let's squeeze in one more. Packers under 9.5 wins.
This is just that this division is awesome. It's the best one in football. And someone's got to have a down year, and it's either going to be Green Bay or Chicago. But I like Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams more than I like Jordan Love and LaFleur. So that's why I went with Green Bay under 9.5. I think the Lions, even with their secondary issues, are going to be much better than they were a year ago. And Minnesota's a huge wild card. Green Bay under 9.5.
Yeah, Packers have been to the playoffs three straight seasons. But guess what? If we were back in the old format where seven teams didn't make it, guess how many times the Packers would have been in the playoffs the last 3 years? Zero. Been a seventh seed all three of those years. More NFL, and we'll get to college football next with Jeff Parles. It's a numbers game right here at VSiN. Coming back.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Numbers game live from Circa Resort Casino, downtown Las Vegas. It's Gil Alexander. We got a lot more to get to with Parlay, so let me run through the final tweets. Rangers Savant, what's your take on this PCA Shohei MVP debacle? Pete Crow Armstrong is a superstar, don't get me wrong, but when he gives the Cubs 80-plus innings of sub-2 ERA ball this season, then we can have the MVP talk. Rangers Savant, I am with you completely, except for the fact that I keep making this point, which is any year that these voters can have an opening to not voting for Shohei for MVP, and I think they get that opening in their minds because those 80 innings will be forgotten. Not forgotten, but they'll use it as a reason, I guess, to have an opening to vote for somebody else. And in this case, that somebody else is Pete Crow Armstrong, who, by the way, has the most win probability added after the sixth inning of any major leaguer. But you are correct. Like, I agree with what you're saying. And Matt Brown brought up yesterday, yeah, but what if Shohei comes back and like has two great starts on the hill at the end of the year? Then that pitching part comes back into play. And I think all of that is the strange alchemy of voting for awards. Russell Smith, CCR's There's a Bad Moon on the Rise being sung is There's a Bathroom on the Right. Somebody else brought that up. Montreal Max, as per my wondering about Iga, how many times she retired? Twice at the Italian Open, 2023 to Rybak in a third set, 2-2 with a right leg injury, and also at the Madrid Open, Madrid Open recently, April 2026, in the third set, down 0-3 with the gastrointestinal illness. I do remember that. Spence, y'all should tip Dustin out for running that draft. Okay, maybe he's accepting tips. I don't know. And Rick Ollier just got into the car and immediately heard the voice of what I can only describe as a ghost, and it's activated something deep within. Great to hear you again, Parlay. IGA and NYC, he says. Iga, New York City, LFG. He concludes that great tweet with. Jeff Parlay is, in fact, kind enough to join us for a second segment. You may know him as Jeff Parles. Hard for me to get Parles out, right? Jeff Parlay. As your late grandfather greeted me with, "Hello, Gil, Stephen Parlay." And I had so much shame.
Great moment. So, but
the shame that came over me in that moment. okay, let's get, because we have a bunch more to get to, so let's get to them. Continuing with your NFL thoughts, let us continue with, like, we left off with the Packers. Ooh, this is an interesting one. Niners under 10.5 wins. All comes down to the injuries, doesn't it?
That is why I did it. Now, you'll see on your screen in a second that 9.5 is a number that is out there a lot. I would not bet the 9.5. Make sure you go find a 10.5. And Circa's got one. Obviously, they have it up and down. And I forget which other book. I think it was Caesars. Had 10.5 minus 140, which I don't love the juice, but maybe worth it to even lay that. Just because, look, San Francisco, I don't want to get into the substation nonsense, but they always seem to have injuries. Ricky Pearsall's not going to play at all this year. I thought he was going to have a big second year in the league. You're playing in a really difficult division with arguably the two best teams in the NFL ahead of you in the Rams and the Seahawks. It's just really hard to go over 10.5 in that scenario, in that division. So I'll go under 10.5. Make sure you find the 10.5, because it wouldn't shock me if they go 10-7.
Yeah, I'm super bullish on the Niners this year, but I have to concede every injury that comes down the pipeline, I just start shaking my head. I'm like, here we go again. All right, last two NFL, they're both New York teams, and you both don't like either of them. Under on the season win totals for both the Jets, your Jets, by the way, and the Giants.
So this is a complete fade of the Jets' schedule and the coaching staff still being the worst in the NFL. Aaron Glenn was the most obvious one-and-done candidate I can ever remember. They keep him around because he was a former Jet, and they were going to change the culture and all that. And honestly, Muji, the GM, likes him. And I actually think Muji's built a pretty good offense, all things considered. They have a really good offensive line. I love that they brought Breece Hall back. I like their draft, even though Sadiq probably is going to miss some time. Geno is a total wild card at this point. But I still have big questions about that defense. They have a brutal schedule. Even with the last place schedule, they cross with the AFC West and the NFC North, the Jets do. So really, really difficult schedule. I'll go under 5.5. And then the Giants, are we sure John Harbaugh is still a good head coach, Kelly? That's my big question here. Yeah. That kind of puts a bow on everything we started with, too. Like, are we sure that he is still a high-end coach? I'm not so sure about that. Jackson Dart can't even play a quarter in the preseason without going in the blue tent. And look, that's another team I have questions about their defense. Playing in a division where, look, I have questions about Washington, but I think if Daniels can stay healthy, that offense will be good. You already heard my thoughts about the Dallas offense. And Who knows what the Eagle offense, even though they can't be much worse than they were a year ago. I just don't like the Giants like a lot of people do. It's hard for me to see them going 8-9, 8-9, 9-8. I like them under two. I like the Jet under more than I like the Giant under, even though it's the smaller number, just because that Jet schedule is brutal and AG is so bad.
Are you excited by the fact this morning that Ian Rapoport has reported that the Giants have just signed Najee Harris to a one-year deal? Does that move the needle for you at all? Yeah, me neither. No. Yeah.
I didn't realize he wasn't on the team, honestly. So, no, it doesn't.
All right, college football. Let's do this in reverse order. Let's do the non-betting thoughts first, because I want to get this the macro at the top out of the way here. Texas, Miami,
yeah.
Oregon. You feel one of those teams is undervalued and the other two you're not buying into. Which is which?
So Oregon's the overrated one. I don't understand how, and again, the AP poll's meaningless, but could they go 11-1 or 10-2 in the regular season? Sure. Would I ever want to bet them at that plus 750 to win the national championship? No way, Gilly.
Yeah.
No way. I have no faith in Dan Lanning in these huge games. And I also am not convinced Dante Moore is as good as people think he is. Now, Oregon is going to beat up on the weaker teams they play in the Big Ten. They do have to play Ohio State again this year. So that will obviously be a big game. Buckeyes are going to be awesome, but they might have an extra loss than they probably should just because of the nature of their schedule. Also, that game in L.A. against USC will be tricky for Oregon. It wouldn't shock me if the Ducks go 10-2, 9-3. But they're the ones that are ranked high that I don't really love. The Texas Longhorns have the most talented team in the country, Gil. They have the most talented team in the country in my book. If you're paying attention by the end of the year last year, Arch Manning was the second-best quarterback in college football. The only guy who was better was Fernando. That was it. And Arch was awesome after that loss to Florida.
Down the stretch.
So yeah. Texas, unbelievably talented, but their schedule is brutal. And this is the case with everybody in the SEC. Their schedule is just so hard with the extra conference game. Texas could still make the playoff. They could still win the national championship. But their schedule is brutal with that Ohio State game mixed in week two, which then I guess by default leaves Miami, right? The Canes are awesome. The Canes are awesome. I still have my questions about Crystal Ball, but the man almost did win the national championship last year. He's almost knocked off the voodoo of the idiocy that ends up happening in his games. They have an unbelievable quarterback, running back, wide receiver punch with Mensah, Fletcher, and Tony. I would say it's the best in the country, actually, even though I think Texas is more talented on defense. Miami's defense is unbelievably talented. The Canes at 10-1, I think, is a good bet because I expect them to go at worst 11-1. If they lose a road game at Notre Dame, fine. They're going to be in the playoff. They're probably going to have a bye. I think Miami's your best bet on the board right now at 10-1 to win it all.
10-1 to win it all. And every time you bring up, you know, every time anyone brings up the whole SEC thing, with the extra conference game, I always say, I go, that's the key. That's the biggest thing of this whole season with the extra conference game, because the committee is going to have so many decisions to make. How are they going to value that with 9-3, let's see, SEC teams when all is said and done? All right, real quick, give me 20 seconds on these final three bets here. Yep. 20 seconds on each. SMU to make the college football playoff plus 430.
Yeah, this is a scheduled bet on SMU. If they beat Florida State week one, who's a total wild card, the rest of that schedule, the only game I really see them losing is the game at Notre Dame. There's another coin flip against Louisville. I think they win that, but I think that's a good bet on an 11-1 SMU making the college football playoff, Gil.
All right. This is Jeff pandering to the Las Vegas audience. UNLV to win the Mountain West.
Yeah, UNLV could have a struggle in non-con, but if they win week one at Hawaii, I think they get North Dakota State at home. New Mexico's quarterback is injured right now, and we don't know his health for the season. Rebels, even though they're the favorite on that board, I think they're the best team. I think they win the Mountain West. Now the Boise's not in the conference anymore.
All right, and then traditional ACC power, Cal, over 6.5 wins. Yes?
This is a complete bet on them winning week one against UCLA.
Yeah.
If they win that game, I think they're winning 8 or 9 games. If they lose that game, I'm in big, big trouble, Gil.
Jeff, awesome having you on the show. I was going to say seeing you, but I see you all the time. But awesome having you on the show. Listeners love you. Thank you so much for spending the time. We appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Kelly.
Jeff Parles, everybody. Here in Las Vegas, you can hear him on ESPN Radio locally. Jeff Parles on Twitter. We call him Parlay, but it's Parles. Prop Points is next. Enjoy from Visa, the Sports Betting Network.